Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is waking up. And if you want to call in to just have a chat about waking up or get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life, the number's to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And you can also follow along on Facebook, facebook.com/mneal. And you can post comments and questions under the show description. And before we kind of get into our theme for today, I want to let you know, I can't even remember if I talked about this last week, but we are doing a very cool masterclass series next week, and we're going to have to close off enrollment soon. It's free, and you can enroll at supercoach.com. Supercoachacademy.com is actually where you'll find the enrollment, and it's called the Taste of Supercoach Academy Masterclass Series. And it's relevant if you are interested in doing the kind of work that I do in the world. It's not necessarily going to be that relevant if you're, if you're a plumber and just want to be a happier plumber, not necessarily the thing for you. But if you're interested in coaching, in supporting people, in the three principles that I talk about on the show each week, then I think you'll really enjoy it. I'm going to be talking about insight and impact and innovation and performance and results over the course of the week. And there's also will be a chance to get on and get some actual coaching from me on the calls. And you can find out more about that at supercoachacademy.com. So waking up, what's that all about then, Michael? So it's waking up is probably the, I don't know if it's the most common metaphor, but I'm going to say that it's the most common metaphor in spiritual tradition for enlightenment. So the notion is that life is a dream, right? The journey of life is a dream, and that we can get better at dreaming, which is the way some people deal with the dream, or we can wake up from the dream, and that's sort of spiritual. So the sort of success orientation is, I want a better dream. That's the self-help, success, go get 'em, tiger, you can do it kind of version of things. And then the spiritual version is generally, well, or you can wake up. And now, if you listen to the show regularly, you know I had a somewhat mentally unstable childhood, right? And my parents did not know what to do with that because they were very normal. And I mean, I don't mean that in an insulting way. They just were, you know. My dad was an engineer, my mom was a scientist, and you know, my brother and sister were pretty normal kids. And so my extremes of emotion and depression were really weird for them. They must have been. I mean, to be fair, we didn't talk about emotions, so I don't know, but I'm pretty sure. And I remember actually the first conversation I really remember having with my mother, I was 20. Not the first conversation I had with my mother, the first conversation I had with about this. And I remember that when I was at school, I had this Mickey Mouse sweatshirt. It's really weird. It's making me emotional to think about a Mickey Mouse sweatshirt, but it was like a comfort blanket. You know, it was the thing that I wore when I was feeling really upset. And I know a lot of people have something like that, a favorite sweater, sweatshirt, or something that comforts them. Well, mine was a Mickey Mouse sweatshirt. And when I left Texas, it wasn't my sweatshirt. I had to give it back to the ex-girlfriend who'd loaned it to me. And I really missed it. And then, I got in my head, oh, I could maybe order one. And this is pre sort of the internet being a really readily accessible thing. So it wasn't like I could just go on Amazon and, you know, track down somebody who lived near Disney World or Disneyland, I think, in LA and, you know, was willing to send me a sweatshirt. And I was so excited and I felt good for like 3 days, 4 days, however long it was between them saying they were going to send it and it arriving. And it was the wrong Mickey Mouse sweatshirt. Aww. I'm assuming you're all out there going, aww. And I burst into tears for 2 days. Not quite continual, but pretty steady. And my mom came down. I was I was that kid. I was living in my parents' basement. And she tried to cheer me up. And she told me, and I genuinely think she didn't know this was a line out of The Sound of Music. She told me that when she felt sad, she would think of a few of her favorite things and it would lift her spirits. And she also told me that she didn't think I was really mentally unwell. I was just highly strung. I'd always been highly strung, which I actually found quite comforting. And so we talked. We had this lovely chat about our favorite things. And I had a cat back then named Petey, and Petey was definitely one of my favorite things. And I loved the show The Young Ones. If you haven't seen The Young Ones, just, well, it's a bit crass and anarchic, but it was really funny. And it's a British comedy. And, you know, if you go on YouTube, just the character of Neil in The Young Ones would always make me smile. And it did it. It did the trick. It stopped my incessant crying. And I began to feel a bit more human. And it was comforting. And I even remember feeling kind of hopeful that maybe I wasn't as nuts as I thought I was. And at the time, I was also seeing a state-mandated therapist because I was a danger to myself and others. And I went to the therapist, and I told him what my mom said, and I told him about like how hopeful I had felt. And I remember, I want to say bless his heart, which is kind of the Texas way of saying, oh my God. But like, he said, yeah, wouldn't it be nice if it were that simple? And kind of, you know, kind of rolled his eyes and that sort of, you know, I can't believe you're so naive to think this isn't a big problem. And I just got quiet enough that I kind of knew I needed to get really far away from the therapist and my basement and my family, even though they're a lovely family. And so I decided that I was going to go to London, and I had gotten a place at drama school, and he had suggested that I defer it because, you know, I wasn't well enough. And I thought, you know, okay, no, I'm going to go to London. By the way, I will get to calls. I know this is very self-indulgent, hopefully helpful, because I am going somewhere with it. But if you want to call in, I'll you can listen in online when you've called, and I'll get to your calls. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S. is 001-760-918-4300. So I went to London, and I you know, I did okay. You know, I was kind of really keeping myself at a distance from people because I didn't want anyone to know how fragile I was. But, you know, I was functional enough that I made some friends. I remember thinking, ah, they don't know how fragile I am. I'm blending in. You know, I wasn't quite as far gone as to think I was an alien, but I kind of felt like an alien. And then one day I was sitting in the foyer of the Central School of Speech and Drama in London. And there were a bunch of guys from my class, and, you know, we all got very guy-y. That's a technical term that has something to do with testosterone and ego. And, you know, everyone was comparing their relative prowess at drinking and shagging and bears. Oh my. And they were trying to engage me in this, you know, as the American guy, you know, tell us about your drinking and shagging and bears. Oh my. And I remember thinking, and I'd like literally this thought stood out so much. Why are they treating me like I'm one of them? Don't they know how fragile I am? And that was a waking up moment, because something inside me twigged it. Something inside me saw through it. It was a sudden awakening from the hypnosis of my own thoughts. It was almost like I'd been doing auto-suggestion. I'd been doing negative affirmation. I'd been telling myself, I am fragile. I am fragile. I am fragile. I am a fragile human being. I am fragile. And I'd been telling it to myself for years without ever hearing myself say it. And in that moment, I heard myself say it for the first time. And it was disorienting. I don't know if you've ever woken up from a trance, if you've ever done hypnosis, but it's like waking up from a nap that, you know, when you nap for a little too long and you're kind of disoriented and you can't quite remember where you are. And then as I sort of found my feet, as I regained my bearings, I remember thinking, well, why do I think I'm fragile? Now, I don't remember whether or not I joined in the conversation and lied about my prowess at drinking and shagging and bears, oh my. But what I do remember was that I was okay. I kind of knew it. I kind of knew that things were different. It was a mini awakening, right? In Eastern tradition, Satori is the big awakening. It's the awakening from the dream of life to the truth underneath it. It's awakening from the illusion to the reality. But there are also things in Zen Buddhism called Kensho moments, which are like mini awakenings. So this was like a mini Satoru. It was a Kensho moment. I didn't wake up from the dream, but I woke up to the fact that I was dreaming. And when that happens, there's a kind of a natural confidence that comes up in you. And I found that in me more and more of the time. And I stopped holding myself so carefully and like I needed to be wrapped in cotton wool. And because of that, I started to feel like a normal human being. No less fragile than anyone else in the world, but no more fragile than anyone else in the world. And part of the point of that is about the fragility and our resilience and, you know, that our confidence in humanity is never more than one thought away. But there are a few other things that waking up brings us that improving on the dream just can't bring. So I don't even mean to tease, but I'm going to come back to that. And I'm going to go to the phones. So numbers to call if you want to get in, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And in fact, we will begin in Canada with Barb. Barb, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Well, we're going to talk about my broken heart, even though I've gone and listened to your segments on it over and over again to bring myself comfort. But not long ago, about a month ago, I met somebody, and I had just moved to a new town. In fact, moved back to Canada after being gone for 22 years. And we started a relationship, and I went really deep, really fast. And about 3 weeks deeply into it, and we both went real deep, some issues came up. Some of his issues came up. An ex-girlfriend had found out that we were seeing each other, and he hadn't quite, he thought he had resolved, you know, where he was with that relationship. But when she had sent a note and a necklace back, he got kind of sucked into the drama, not of getting back into it, but just of feeling that he hadn't processed both his marriage and his relationship and his dad dying over the last year. So it put our relationship on hold.
Okay.
And he decided that he needed to go into some therapy, and he might have something with alcohol. I'm not sure. I was kind of looking at that over the last 3 weeks, too, and he had gotten drunk the night he'd gotten that letter and stuff. And so it's as though I had expanded to the depth of my being and sharing all the love that I was with this person. And now, even though we're friendly, We've taken a break with the understanding that he's got to go sort some things out for himself.
Okay.
And in saying that, it's as though I felt in the last month a lot of my energy had gone to being focused on us and him as opposed to my own well-being. So I feel I feel like I don't know if it's loss of control. I just feel this real aching sense of loss. Like I want to be with him, yet I can't be with him. And we still claim that we love each other. It's just he's got to sort things out on his journey. So I've kind of got to let go, not knowing that if we'll get
back
together or not.
Let me jump in, Barb. I've got three things for you that are going to maybe sound disconnected, and maybe they are, but I think they're going to connect up, okay?
Okay.
So the first one, and I made this up this morning. I'm not making it up right now. I made it up like hours ago, is the 2 week rule, right? And the 2 week rule is you're allowed to be totally thrown and lost and devastated and tumulted by life for 2 weeks before you even have to worry about it.
Okay. I'm there.
Right. Great. So that's, yeah, I just want to put that in because I think sometimes people think, oh, if I understand the spiritual truth and I am awake to this, I will never feel like, no. Give yourself 2 weeks, right? Like minimum.
Well,
you know, it can be 17 years, but 2 weeks I think is fine.
Okay.
So that's the first thing. Second thing, I want to tell you a story. It's a sideways story, but I think it's very relevant. I met a couple on a course probably 16, 17 years ago. And it was a course about happiness. And happiness was a big question for me 16, 17 years ago because I hadn't experienced that much of it. And the argument that was being made on the course was that happiness was possible regardless of circumstances. That happiness was not in any way, shape, or form circumstance dependent. And I could see how with a lot of the things that I was putting my happiness onto about success and money and stuff like that, that might be true. But in my mind at that time, there were certain preconditions to happiness. And this couple that were on the course started talking about losing their baby at 7 months. And they were talking about it with such love and affection and tears in the eyes, but not bravely snuffling through the sadness tears, but that kind of just open tears of love and memory. And when the woman explained how she experienced happiness, even though she had lost her child, she said, I never knew that I was capable of loving that much. I had never experienced that depth and scope of love in my life. And that was the gift that our baby brought us. And I wish I would give everything I've got to have him back. But in all honesty, I couldn't be more grateful for the time that we had. Now, I pushed and probed a little because I found that went against everything that I believed about how love and happiness worked at that time. It really seemed outside in to me, like, no, if you have good stuff, you feel good. If you have bad stuff, you feel bad. But I saw something in that began to wake me up to a deeper truth about where our feelings come from and where our experience comes from. Now, does that, can you, without it being too ham-handed, can you see a connection between that and your experience?
Absolutely. I can see that. I am, you know, this experience gave me the opportunity to show me the depth of my love and the capacity, which love isn't taken away. It's within me. I was sharing it, so I have somebody at the front door, and I don't want to answer it. So I'm going to close my door.
Okay.
I'm sorry. So it showed me the capacity to which I open up and became vulnerable and just showered this individual with love. So yeah. I know that's still within me. It also... I'm having a hard time concentrating since somebody's walking through my house right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, Barb.
And my happiness isn't dependent on that circumstances because I have a lot of other things within myself to be happy on, and I understand that. And I've had moments of happiness with this, but there's still a part of me that is like, feeling such a deep sense of loss like I've never felt before.
Mm-hmm. So well, then that's, but Barb, that's what you're being woken up to as well. You're being woken up to a deeper level of your own humanity.
Okay. Okay.
That's another part of the gift. Now, I'm not suggesting that, I feel miserable, yay, humanity. I'm saying that it's two sides of a coin.
Yeah.
Right? If you really want to be able to feel the full depth of love and hope and gratitude and joy that's available in life, that comes with the capacity to feel everything else in life because we feel thought. But if you're awake to it, you don't have to suffer from it. You can just experience it.
Okay. So just let myself be where I'm at without judging myself or trying to change it in a hurry.
Something I wrote about in The Space Within was there's no such thing as a solution to a feeling. Right? It's not a problem to feel stuff. It's just what we do. When we think, we feel. A feeling is the shadow of a thought. Now, if we're not awake to the thought-feeling connection, then it really looks like the feelings kind of have a life of their own and they're problematic and we need to do something about them or we need to do something about what caused them or blah, 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 blah. When you see that we live in an experience-generating machine called the human mind, then that's just the experience that's being generated in this moment, and there'll be another experience in the next moment. And the life of a feeling is not one breath longer than the life of the thought that creates it.
True.
Complete for now?
Not just quite yet.
All right. I'll give you one more go. Let's see what you got.
Okay. Oh, it came and it went. Don't leave me yet. Just don't leave me yet.
I'll tell you what I'll do.
Maybe that's it. And there's a part of me that is not wanting to separate from him, and yet there's a part of me that doesn't want to separate from him.
Here's what I'm going to do. Because I get that, and I'm going to address it, but I'm going to address it off the air. So here's what I think is going to be helpful for Barb, and I'm saying it this way because I actually think it's going to be helpful for everyone. Right? This isn't really a Barb thing. This is a human being thing. Is we think we need to resolve a situation before we can settle down in ourselves and just be. So, Barb, like most of us, you know, will at some level be thinking, okay, so I need to figure out what I'm going to do with this guy. I need to get some resolution on my relationship before I can just accept where I am and what I've got from it. And I need to almost put it behind me or make it work so that I can continue on in it. It is the exact opposite. As we settle down in ourselves, as we wake up from the roller coaster of our own kind of wild ride of our thinking, it becomes really apparent what to do in real life. And sometimes what's apparent is there's nothing to be done. And sometimes there is. But it's easy to see when you're not connecting it with your feeling. Sid Banks, who, you know, first articulated the principles of mind, consciousness, and thought that I talk about each week on the show and in the Caffeine for the Soul blog and the podcast and kind of everything I do. He talked about how when you can feel what you feel, when you can experience your experience without projecting it onto external events, circumstances, or people, you're mentally healthy. When your feelings are being projected onto externals, that's when we struggle. That's when we get mentally out of balance. And so there's a sort of a waking up to the source of our own experience. There's a rebalancing. There's a coming home to ourselves and ownership, 100% recognition that our feelings come from our thinking 100% of the time. 100% of our feeling comes from 100% of our thought in the moment. And that's just how we work. And it doesn't mean you can control it, because most of the time you can't. But it does mean that it's a lot more fluid than it would be if it was in some way connected to external circumstances. Let's go out to the UK and let's speak with Heather. Heather, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael.
Hi. Hello.
Great to be on the call. I'm waking up new possibilities. The most recently, the thing I'm hoping you'll be able to help me with is I've had I called it a phobia of long standing of to do with vomiting. Either, you know, if I'm ill or if I see or hear someone else vomit, and I thought.
Do you know what? My wife's got that one. It's called a metaphobia.
Oh, has she really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm not the only one. I feel, I've been feeling very ashamed of this phobia. And it's only just occurred to me to open up about it and ask for help and to sort of get past the shame. Because the early hours of last Thursday morning, my housemate was ill, and I heard him, and I thought I was getting over this, and it was clear that night I just wasn't. I freaked out, and I couldn't master my fear, and I've been into the three principles for a while, and I just couldn't. I was in such panic, I actually left the house. I ran out of the house. I was driving around in the middle of the night. I was too frightened to come back in the house. And I thought, this is crazy behavior. And it was only then it occurred to me that, you know, there might be a way of seeing this differently. But it's what I'm stuck on is I don't know how you can use the understanding to quiet something down like that when it is, you know, your whole, as I think I said to someone, my whole nervous system goes straight to DEFCON 3, and I just can't see past that, and I can't see any quiet, I can't see any thoughts that are leading.
You okay if we play around a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, first off, I just want to compare crazy stories, because my most recent one was I was driving in my old neighborhood, and I can't remember if there was even a cue for it. Like, I don't remember where it came from. But I got to the point where I was afraid to step on the accelerator of the car. Like, I was at a stop sign, and I thought, I can't do it. I can't do it. Now, I've never had that before. I've never had it since. But it was so freaky that I actually just sat at the stop sign, and I called my wife, and I said, babe, I can't come home. And she said, what do you mean? I said, I can't step on the gas pedal. And I was like, here's the difference between you and me. I was in hysterics because I thought it was the funniest thing that had ever happened. I was literally having a full-blown insane panic attack in my car at a stop sign. And I'm, you know, freaking radio guy, right? Now, the truth is, we have brains, and sometimes funky stuff happens with them, right? We think, and sometimes the thoughts that come into our head come so from left field and seem so real that we're just in it. So this is what I would call the difference between waking up from thought and waking up to it. Like, I could not wake up from it. I was stuck at that freaking stoplight. But I did wake up to it. I was aware, wow, I am freaking the hell out right now.
Okay, yeah. I see the difference.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Because of that, I didn't get caught up in some desperate attempt to fix it. Because I know the nature of thought is transient. Thought doesn't have object permanence. Right? Thought comes and goes of its own accord. It's only when I turn it into a thing that it starts to feel solid and permanent and like I've got to do something about it.
So can I ask, do you think that if I, next time it happens, and I can allow myself to be freaked out and just to know that that's what's happening, even though I can't do anything about it, you know, I'm okay. It's just my brain doing something freaky that I can't control, but it will pass. Do you think that the fear reaction itself will dwindle, or do I need to go and do a, you know, like an NLP or hypnosis thing or something to kind of break that association?
So here's what I would say. And this is like the worst advice in the world would be to take the advice of a stranger on the radio, even if it's Dr. Laura or me, right? Like, you know, I'm going to give you don't get me wrong. I'm going to tell you what to do, but for God's sake, don't do it. Right. Cause you know, right. You know, you've got wisdom, you've got insight, you'll figure it out, but I will tell you what I would say. Okay. And that's if you're not so freaked out that you're kind of stuck at home and afraid to go out, then I would absolutely want to see what happens having had this conversation the next time it comes up, and to see if you are more awake to it, to see if you experience it differently because you're more awake to it, you're kind of wise to it a little bit, and to see what it's like to have a panic attack without panicking.
An adventure.
Well, it really is. So that would be my advice, for what it's worth.
But well, that is a new thought.
But wow. please phone back and let us know how it goes.
I will.
Because really, this, I mean, like, we love helping people and stuff, but really, folks, this is entertainment. So...
No, I will see what happens. I will stay with the experience and see if I can kind of feel myself having the experience but not kind of locked into it. And just, yeah, and like you say, just see how it feels. It's an experience. It's see how it feels. Does it feel any different now that I'm waking up to something I haven't seen before? So
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yes,
what fun. What are you going to do this at? What are you going to do this afternoon, Heather? Well, I'm hoping to have a panic attack, but I don't know when it's going to come. But, you know, I've made space in my diary just in case, and we'll just see. Okay.
I like being crazy, that kind of crazy anyway.
All right, Heather. Thank you. And please, please, please do let us know how it goes.
I will. Thank you so much, Michael.
All right. Bye-bye. You know, I meant everything I said in that. Like, everything I said is true. I really did have that stop sign experience. And it really was funny to me. And I couldn't move, and then I could, and then I went home. And I really meant what I said about don't take that as a formula for what you should do if you think your situation is similar to Heather. Right? This is not a generic piece of advice. Ah, feel your feelings. Oh, get like, literally, you have a wisdom inside you. One of the things Heather said that I want to flag is she said it was only after this was going on that it occurred to her that maybe she could do something about it. That capacity of something to occur to us is our own innate wisdom. It's our own innate common sense. It's the wiser part of ourselves, and it's always right there, and it will guide us in the pauses between our crazy. Right? It will give us exactly what we need to do to move forward, regardless of whether or not it would be relevant to any other human being or even to us at a different time in our lives. All right, let's go back out to the phones. Let us go to Chicago and let us speak with Holly. Holly, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've been listening to your show for probably 8 years, and this is the first time I've called in.
Nice. Welcome. I wish I had a little bell like a ding to welcome you. But
right, a little. Oh, I'll imagine it.
There you go.
So usually I listen to the archives, so that's but I wanted to call in today because I'm having some feelings about my new job that I just
took. Okay.
I have, for the past, like 18 years, I have been, my source of income has been through three ways. That has been acting, casting, and teaching. I'm an acting teacher, and I've been focusing mostly on, I still make money doing all three of those things, but my focus in the past 4 years has been mostly on teaching, which is where I have found the most satisfaction. Mm-hmm. If I had to choose one of those things, it would be teaching. So since I've been in Chicago, I've been freelancing and doing some a lot of contract work and also dabbling in other things like, maybe I want to do this now, or doing a little career dating, like, oh, I'll take this coaching class. And I just recently took a job. Mm-hmm. It's been a couple months now where I'm teaching communication skills to business people. Which is teaching, but I've gone into it feeling like, is this the thing? Does this feel right? And I've experienced quite a bit of a resistance and also a little resentment that I'm having to teach somebody else's curriculum when I feel like, or there's a little bit of sadness going on where I feel like, why am I not doing this myself? I have been creating my own curriculum as an acting teacher for 15 years. And so I'm in this position of, I'm not sure what to do. I'm not sure if...
So, okay, Holly, can I ask you a question that I pretty much can guarantee you nobody else on Hay House Radio would ask you?
Okay, good.
What if the universe didn't give a shit what you do with your life?
Yeah, I think I get that, but I think that there's a little, right? Like I want it to be different.
So no, stay with me. I am not saying, therefore put up and shut up. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, when we get into, is this the right thing for me, as if the universe has a right thing for us and everything else is the wrong thing, we will be forever discontented. Right? There's a famous story about Gregory and Mary Catherine Bateson. Gregory Bateson was a great etymologist and anthropologist, and his daughter Mary Catherine is quite a lovely writer in her own right. Composing a Life is a book I remember just loving when I first read it many years ago. And she tells a story in the book that when she was 6 years old, she called her dad in and she was very upset. And he said, "What's wrong, honey?" And she said, "My desk is always messy." And he said, "Well, what do you mean?" And she said, "Well, the pencils are supposed to be there and the ruler is supposed to be there. And my folder is supposed to be here and my books are supposed to be here and I can never keep it right." And he said, "Well, honey, that's because you've set it up so there's only one way for it to be right and an infinite number of ways for it to be wrong." See, and when we make up that the universe has a right thing for us, this is the thing the universe wants us to be doing, but I have to overcome. When we kind of create that heroic overcoming saga in our lives, plus side is we get to feel heroic. But the downside is we lose the simple pleasure of being where we are. Now, here's the thing about the simple pleasure of being where we are. When we know that we can enjoy any job, that we can absolutely find the fun, find the learning, find the engagement in things, because the fun and the enjoyment comes from the engagement. We're then no longer trying to choose what to do according to some divine oracle, but rather from, do I want to?
Do I want to, right?
Like, that's it.
Yeah. Well, in that story that you just told, the thought that came to me was, just rearrange your desk how you want it. Do I want to?
Do you want to? And that answer may change over time. It's like, yeah, for now. Or,
right.
No, I really don't. And it's that simple. Like, it is so simple to navigate life when we don't make up a set of rules for how it's supposed to be.
Right, that there's some path out there that the universe wants me on, and all I have to do is go find it.
Right. See, now, if I was going to make up divine intervention in my life thing, and by the way, when I say make up, maybe it's true. I don't know, but the truth is, none of us know, so we're making it up. Right.
Right.
So if I was going to make something up, what I might make up is I might make up fate. I might make up that there are certain things that are unavoidable in my life, mm-hmm. that simply no matter what choices I think I'm making with my free will, I'm always going to wind up at a certain point in my life being a plumber. Right? Like I could make that up. Like that maybe in the divine design of Holly's life, when the gods were laying it out, they went, and at this point, she shall take a teaching job. And she can feel about it however she wants, but it's done. You know, like, mm-hmm. preordination at least doesn't create suffering.
Yeah.
So just to kind of bring our little conversation about it to a, you know, to put a little bow on it. What occurs to you about it in this moment, just thinking about it now?
To rearrange the desk.
Okay.
How I want it to, to take the power back, instead of thinking that it's like, oh, something is going to save me, or something is like, I'm supposed to make it work because this is the door that is open.
Yeah.
That it's really just simply, do I want to do it? And if the answer is no, then great.
Oh my God, I promise you, your life is about to get so much easier.
Yay.
Yay. Thank you for phoning, Holly.
Thanks, Michael.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
So always like a long-time listener, first-time caller. So please do. I don't know. I'll have to ask the guys at the studio if we can get a bell. You know, so you know, and then we can ring a bell when we get a first-time caller. Let me go back to this whole waking up from a dream thing, because I am aware I started some storytelling. Here for me are a couple of things about waking up that I think are just awesome. Okay, one of them is that waking up from the dream of our thinking, right? Because that's the dream, that's the hypnosis, that's the you know, is we think 24/7. Now, we think more or less at different times, but we're always thinking. And by thinking, I mean there is mental activity in our brains at all times. And the way we know this is that, in fact, that is the measure of being alive. When someone no longer has mental activity, they are brain dead. So we're continually thinking. Well, we will fall asleep to that. We will get caught up in our thoughts. We will get lost in the dream. But waking up from the dream is inevitable. Waking up is as natural as falling asleep. So when I told the story about, you know, being with all those guys and sort of noticing, oh my God, I think I'm fragile. There was an innate health in me that found its way up to the surface, and it steered me back towards my fundamental okayness. And literally, I can tell you, from that moment, the moment I woke up from my daymare of being fragile, I never fell fully asleep to it again. I would occasionally kind of go back to thinking that, but not with any sense of, oh, this is real. Now, most of us think we need to do something to either prevent ourselves from falling asleep or to force ourselves to wake up. So, for example, meditation practice, generally speaking, is meant to wake us up. And mindfulness practice, generally speaking, is designed to stop us from falling asleep. So we meditate to kind of get underneath our thoughts, to slip back into the witness position, to wake back up to the flow of thought. And we use mindfulness, kind of knowing where our hands are, where our feet are, noticing our breath as we go about daily life, to stop us from falling back to sleep. But for me, knowing that we have the capacity to wake up already inside us, it's what in our work in the principles we call the principle of consciousness. It is that capacity in any moment to wake up to the dream, and in any moment to wake up from the dream, and that is already alive in us. It's already at work inside us, and it means we don't need to work so hard at staying awake to enjoy a more awakened life. Now, I'm going to guess that you probably don't fear going to sleep at night. Now, you might. I understand that, but I'm going to guess that you don't. And if you don't, why don't you? Like, why aren't you afraid to go to bed at night? And I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say it's because you know that whatever dreams may come, you'll wake up from them in the morning. And in fact, you might even look forward to the dreams, because sometimes we have really cool dreams. So you don't have to worry about getting caught up in mental fantasies, right? You don't have to worry about getting caught up in daymares, because at some point, reliably and inevitably, your consciousness will wake you up to the fact that you're lost in your head. And when that happens, you fall back into the moment. And when you are here, when you fall back into the moment, all the power and clarity and wisdom and insight of now will be waiting for you right where you left them. And it will inevitably guide you forward. And that's the gift of consciousness, is that even now, listening to me talk, you are asleep to a whole range of your thinking. Me too. But even now, there are things that we're going to see with so much clarity when we wake up that we can't even imagine them, because it's unimaginable from inside the dream. But just talking about it, the fact that we're in this conversation today, you and I, the fact that this is what we're exploring is like a consciousness tickler. It's like a little mini alarm clock. And my experience tells me it's enough to wake you up to a new level of understanding. And it's enough to make it likely that you'll see more. And however good or bad your dreams may be, I can tell you, everything in life tastes better the more awake to it we are. That's the promise. That's what's on offer. That's what's available to us. That's the gift. All right, we're going to sneak in one more call. We're going to go to Ireland because, hell, if you're phoning all the way from Ireland, I just feel I should go to you. Karen, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today? Hello.
Hi. It's great, isn't it? All the way from Ireland.
Hello. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just listening to you there. I mean, beautiful what you're saying. It's very grounding. You know, I can go within and just connect to spirit or a sense of my own self. I guess I'm you know, I'm 38 now, from such a young age. I've always had a very profound moment where I would have this great sense of something beyond me, and I felt language would dilute that connection or disconnect me from it. Mm-hmm. But as I got older then, what would arise in me is an intense feeling or an overwhelming feeling of not understanding what am I here for, how to use myself in this life. And I try my best not to get pulled into the void of feeling despair, and I try to settle it and trust in it. But it just keeps coming up and keeps re-emerging and re-emerging. And I guess I don't know what it is or what it is it's trying to say to me. So I suppose that's the question I have.
So in a way, it strikes me that there's levels of purpose. So if you were to ask me what the purpose of life is, I would probably say that it seems to be to beget life. Right? So not my life, not your life, not a life, but life. Mm. Life itself seems to exist to expand.
Yeah.
Now, if you were to ask me what is every human being's purpose, and I'm speculating here, let me be very frank. Right? I do not claim divine revelation, but looking at life and reflecting on life, it seems to me that part of the purpose of a human life is to wake up to our true nature, to wake up to the God within, to the spirit within, to that inside us which is in everyone. Now, if you ask me what the purpose in my life is, I'm going to make something up. Now, that's, you can find plenty of people who will tell you, oh, we have a soul purpose, we have a reason that we're here. And I don't disbelieve that, because I know the feeling of being on purpose. But it seems to me that the feeling of being on purpose comes when I'm aligned with my own knowing and wisdom. It's not to do with a particular path outside me. It's to do with a particular place that I come from inside me.
Yeah.
And in that sense, we almost have to look backwards to make up what our purpose is. Or we could say going forward that our purpose is to follow that inner knowing.
Yeah, that makes sense for me. I guess energetically, I recognize that I can live most of my energy or use myself kind of more out in the outer world, in the giving or providing to others. And it's just when I settle right down, I recognize how it's a bit like, you know, I'm not living from the inside out fully. I live from the outside in.
Yeah.
So I need to come back to my own true nature and listen to that and go with the flow of that rather than the outer environment or the outer world, which to me at times.
Right. So, but Karen, only if you want to live a wonderful, deeply fulfilled and beautiful life.
Yeah.
If you're not into that, it doesn't matter. Right. That's the thing. It's not an injunction from the universe. It's not a punishment. It's not a, oh God, okay, I've got to live my purpose. It is the greatest gift of being alive, is that we have the possibility of waking up to that deepest place inside us more and more and more, and living from it more and more and more. There's a wonderful quote from Gandhi where he said, "The only tyrant I will accept in this world is the still small voice within." To get to follow that, to get to align with that, and to get to live from that is, in my mind, the greatest gift that we have and the very point of living from the inside out. Karen, thank you. We are out of time. Thank you all for listening. If you don't already know, check out michaelneal.org for everything new that I do. Caffeine for the Soul podcast, top five in the United Kingdom this week. And check out supercoachacademy.com for next week's masterclass. Till then, have fun, learn heaps, and I will talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.